It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh,
that's
Hayward.
What I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Taking it old school tonight. Sorry for the delay, guys. 10:45 sharp. We are on the air for the Celtics postgame show on CLNSmedia.com, the leading online provider of video and audio coverage of your Boston Celtics, who, I don't care that they won or lost 6-7 of their last 11-12. Let me get that right. I think it's 6 of their last 12 they've lost.
6 of 12.
They've been playing 500 ball for the last 12 games, as Andrew Rubino fact-checking me. And tonight, it doesn't matter. They're the hottest team in the league because they have the biggest comeback in all of basketball this season. A game where they trailed by as many as 30. Went down at the half. 26 in that 30 range. They were just completely out of this game going into the half. And by the end of it, they win it. And who's right in the middle of it? But none other than the guy we talk about every single night on this program, Marcus Smart, taking two charges, hitting a basket in the final 20 seconds of this game, assisting Jason Tatum on his basket to get the game within one, and then the first of two charges gets the Celtics the ball back as they're doing the full court press to try to get that ball back with just 7 seconds left. Harden just inexplicably pushes Smart, not once, but twice. And the Rockets just completely pissed this game away. My opening question for you guys, and I'm Bobby Manning here, joined by Andrew Rubino and Taylor McLeod, the Syracuse trio here. Question for you guys, first for you, Taylor. Did the Celtics win this, or did the Rockets just completely blow this tonight?
So that's one of my least favorite sayings ever, like, oh, we lost this game, or the other team won it. No. It's always a combination of both. I don't deal with the whole, you know, we lost this game. Because if there's an excuse for a team to lose this game, it would be the Celtics. They have a brutal schedule. They've played a brutal schedule. They're in the midst of it, and they're playing one of the best teams in the NBA. So if any team should have, quote-unquote, lost it, it would have been the Celtics. The Rockets have no excuse. I don't care if they played poorly in the second half. The Celtics won this game. Marcus Smart is the greatest basketball player of all time, and that's that.
Yep. You know.
Look, I think it's one of those things that nobody expected the Celtics to come all the way back. I thought when they were down 25 or close to 30 that you were going to see them at least chip away at it and make it competitive, because a Brad Stevens coached basketball team always seems to find a way, especially in the first 39 games of this year, have found a way to always claw their way back in. But tonight you just expect that the Houston is good enough, or they've shown that they've been good enough so far this year to, at least especially with Harden as their playmaker, to like be able to step on the gas when they need to. And obviously, even when they slow down, they've still been able to pull out these victories over teams, because obviously they're built off shooting. But I think that most people have seen this Rockets team this year, Bobby, they've kind of changed in that one, especially when they've had Chris Paul on the floor, is that they've been able to play other than just their shooting. They've been able to play good defense. They've been able to get to the rim, and which is something they haven't always been able to do before Chris Paul, and they kind of look like they were crossing that threshold to really become a legitimate contender, not just one of those teams that, maybe they have a shot, and tonight they kind of took a step backwards. So I don't know if you can say the Celtics necessarily won it as much as Houston lost it, so I kind of get maybe differ with Taylor on that, but that's my initial reaction.
Yeah, I'm with you, Bino, and I'm going to give the Celtics an enormous amount of credit for this. They executed throughout the second half, had a monster third quarter. You can't give them enough credit for that third quarter. They had the 25-9 run to close it. Kyrie Irving tonight was just sensational. Every time they needed a spurt of offense, he was getting to the rim. He was laying it in nice and smooth. He finished the game 9 of 18, 26 points, 7 of 8 at the free throw line. And bad turnovers, that turnover down the stretch where they got the ball back and he pushed the pace across half court. There's about 24 seconds left. and he just completely lost the ball. So I'm still wondering whether he was supposed to be pushing the pace there. There was no timeout, of course, so Brad Stevens was expecting the Celtics to try to get back on that play by just getting into their offense right away. It's always that big debate on those plays, whether you're going to get into your offense right away or take the timeout and be all set up. Of course, right there, it did not work. And at that point, guys, I wasn't feeling so good about this. Taylor.
James Harden's one of my favorite players in the NBA, and I think he's a killer. Like, that step-back three that he takes, he hits that more often than he misses it. But tonight, he was just pulling every possession, and everyone knew it. The entire Garden knew what was happening. Marcus Smart, who was guarding him, knew what was happening. And it was just kind of Harden fell apart down the stretch. He did hit a couple big free throws, and he had one step-back three. But I felt okay because – I can't remember who tweeted it, but someone just tweeted out that the Rockets only made 9 shots in the second half. So they were shooting really poorly. I didn't expect many of their shots to go down. I mean, I did think Harden had a decent shot because he's, after all, James Harden, to, you know, close the door on this one. But I felt good about the Celtics. The second they got within 10 points, I felt really good about this.
Well, what's amazing is you look at this game, the Rockets' biggest lead was 26. And the Celtics' biggest lead was 1.
Yeah.
They did not lead in this game from the first second all the way until the final 3 seconds. When they took that 99-98 lead, that was their first lead of this game. And that just makes this all the more amazing to me, the fact that they really had a scrap from the opening seconds of this game until the final seconds to get back into this. That first quarter was a dumpster fire. They scored 12 points. The offense was not working by any stretch of the imagination. Al Horford was really bad in this game to start. And usually when he digs himself into that hole, he has a tough time getting out of it. He ended up hitting the game winner tonight. I don't know about you two, but I was scared watching him toss up that little 5-footer over his defender in the post right there, because early in the game, we saw him airball that Beano.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that Horford definitely was off tonight, no doubt. And I just think it does show, though, how Brad Stevens has almost created a – I don't want to say – obviously you can't say championship pedigree, because this Celtics core has only played – they've played less than a season – or excuse me, less than half a season together.
Surprised
but
to hear you say that.
Say that again?
Surprised to hear you call it a championship
pedigree. No, but no, this is my point, though, Bob, is that it's so quick how Stevens has had these guys come together and be like, I don't care that Horford's off. I think the best matchup is not for Kyrie to go to the rim in this situation. He thinks that Horford's the best guy in the idea that he felt like he could attack whoever was guarding him, whether it be Nene or Anderson down the stretch. And when you see Brad Stevens go to a guy like Horford right there, I think it just shows that the Celtics have – a legitimate recipe for not only this year but for years moving forward with this core, because when you can go to a guy in Horford that was that off and feel comfortable enough to have him take that shot and make that shot, it does for a lot for everybody else on the team, because there's such a young team. When other guys down the road are going to have off games, they're going to think, okay, even when Horford, who's one of the vets, had an off game, look at what Brad did. Brad trusted him. So I think it's going to be a great learning moment for all of the young guys on the team to see Brad stick with Horford even when he's off and trust him to take that big shot. Taylor, what do you have to think about that?
I think games like tonight are exactly why certain fans hate Al Horford. He doesn't put up great numbers. He doesn't rebound super well. And it's on national TV, so he gets nitpicked a whole lot more. Obviously, at least Bob and I are definitely not those who... When he had the hands down that block with 7 or 6 seconds left, I was very comfortable. I figured he was going to do exactly what he did, because I trust him. He's one of the best players on this team. He's, in my opinion, one of the most consistent players in the NBA. I trusted him completely, and, yeah, I trusted him.
And it's amazing. Last game in Houston, one of those two epic matchups the Celtics had with the Rockets last year. Very good games when these teams meet. And going on 3 straight games now. Horford had that layup at the rim to win that game in Houston last year. The Celtics would have swept that series last year if he hit that. And there were a lot of layups inside tonight where he just didn't seem to have a handle on the possession of the ball, just getting the right touch on guys inside. P.J. Tucker was seemingly all over him to start this game. And give that guy, P.J. Tucker, a lot of credit. Hardy, gritty veteran out there, playing center for a lot of this game. And this game kind of kills me because, on one hand, it's a ginormous momentum boost for the Celtics. I mean, this is the kind of game that they could jump off for the next 10 games or so. I mean, we're almost in the new year. They're almost out of this December stretch where they're just playing a ridiculous amount of games night in and night out. I think it was 14 and 19 they're playing right now, 14 games and 19 nights. And they're going to go into January with just 12 games, nice little 10-game stretch where they're only going to have – a 10-day stretch where they're only going to have one game off. And you have this game to jump off going into that. But on the other side of this, I love this Rocket squad. I said on Twitter tonight, I have a lot of faith in this team being able to give the Warriors a run for their money. I didn't feel quite the same way last year because they didn't have the defense to boast with it. They also didn't have a second superstar in Chris Paul, who, of course, didn't play tonight. And Clint Capela, who went down last year for the season, is back, and he has the best defensive rating in basketball, along with the highest field goal percentage in basketball. So he's been a huge force to what they're doing, and they did not have both of those guys tonight. But James Harden, and you alluded to this a little bit, Taylor, what the heck was he doing tonight? In that second half, he, settling for crazy threes way beyond the three-point line, sitting out on the perimeter and just swinging the ball around, it looked like he was just out there half-assing it. Like, he just looked so lackadaisical, his body language, spotting up on Tatum. His biggest shot of the second half was a nice little three-point shot over Tatum. And that was about it. I mean, I love plus-minus, and he was in for that 26-point lead for the first half, and he was in when the Rockets blew it in the second half, and he almost played the whole game tonight and ended with a plus-minus of zero. So as much as he set the stage for the Rockets' huge lead to begin this, I felt like he blew it tonight. And then the two charges at the end, I mean, the first one, you're trying to create a little bit of space, get the ball inbounds, hit your free throws, and close this game out. So I understand that a little bit, but then you're going to do that twice in a row. I mean, what was he thinking tonight, Bina?
Honestly, Bobby, that second half was the Spurs series last year when he just looked so out of sorts.
Oh, God, you're right.
Isn't it? It's almost like second half, the Garden erupted. It felt like a playoff game. You knew the Rockets won the game, not only because they were reeling, but because Harden played almost 40 minutes. You have Eric Gordon playing 40 minutes. So this is a game, you make no mistake about it, that the Rockets want to win. And all of a sudden, James Harden, who goes from regular season MVP-looking guy, turns into the James Harden of the playoffs. And I think that's why a lot of people have issues with James Harden, this Rockets team potentially come playoff time. And anybody that's a James Harden hater, I'm not one of them. I like Harden. I think he's a great player, but if you have issues with him and the sustainability of his play come playoff time, I mean, he looks like I shouldn't say sustainability come playoff time, but his play in the playoffs and how he's been very inconsistent over his young career. I mean, games like tonight when it's an important game for this Rockets team and he plays playoff minutes and it has almost like that playoff second half atmosphere, Harden kind of choked, Bobby. I don't know if that's too harsh to say, but that's the vibe I got in the second half, just forcing things and kind of doing things that make you scratch your head.
You got into this a little bit tonight. I think you feel the same way. That's why I feel like the Rockets blew this tonight, because this game was on Harden to set it and then close it, and he just did not do the second of those two.
No, and I think the Rockets got too one-dimensional down the stretch. For a while there, Eric Gordon was trying to get to the rim, and he got to the free throw line a couple times. And that looked okay, not great. And then the Nene pick and roll was working a little bit. But down the stretch, they got very one-dimensional. Everyone knew on every single possession, as I mentioned earlier, that it was going to be Harden dribbling out the clock, step back three. Harden dribble out the clock, step back three. And after a while, a team that has a defensive pedigree of the Celtics, it doesn't matter if James Harden is an MVP-type player. If they know what's coming, they're going to defend it. I think Jason Tatum blocked one of his step back threes down the stretch because he knew it was coming. It's no matter how good the player is, it's relatively easy to defend when you know it's coming every single possession.
And Bobby, one quick thing, Bobby, I want to add is I know a lot of people, especially last year, love to say, and this is more of like a Harden and a Rockets thing, but last year all these people like to say, Harden is so much more efficient than Russell Westbrook. Why didn't he win the MVP? You can't tell me, Bobby, that 34 points, 10 assists, 6 boards and 8 turnovers on 7 of 27 shooting It doesn't sound like Russell Westbrook. That's Russell Westbrook's stat line a lot of the time. And Harden had the stat line I just said was Harden's stat line tonight. Don't get me wrong. I love Russell Westbrook. Will always be my favorite player. But you can't say that Harden and Russell don't have that very similar. They're going to ride or die with the team. The team's success is going to ride or die with that player because that's a stat line that shows it. So, anyways, that's just kind of a little rant, but.
You know, it brings me back to that quarterback conversation we've had for years with the NFL. You have these great quarterbacks who put up these amazing stats in the regular season. They win MVPs. And the guys who can't get it done in the postseason get ripped at the end of the day, even though they have all these great accomplishments. And that's what you look at with a guy like James Harden, with a guy like Russell Westbrook especially. These two amazing, unworldly players. I mean, James Harden, I've gone as far as to call him – the best scorer I've ever seen in my life, between the way he shoots outside, how brutally efficient he is at the free throw line and how often he gets there, how well he gets inside and uses his body. I mean, this guy was born to score at a high rate. He was born to get these 40, 50-point games. But the turnovers and just the brutal amount of usage, the way these guys stop the ball sometimes. And it's hard for people to understand because Harden and Westbrook do get such high assist numbers. But at the same time, as ball movement versus assist, it's two different concepts right there. And sometimes when a ball stops on one man like that and they're controlling the whole ball movement of a team, you are going to have high turnover numbers. With extraordinary usage comes extraordinary turnovers. And that's why Celtics fans right now, you know, whether you're an Isaiah Thomas guy or a Kyrie Irving guy, you're going to feel good about the fact that Kyrie Irving, as big of a superstar as he is, I'm sure as big of an ego he has, as big of a brand as he has, he doesn't play like Westbrook and Harden. I mean, he could, but he keeps the turnovers low, which is huge for the Celtics offense that can't really afford them. And he plays within the flow of the game. And Taylor, tonight, when the Celtics needed him on the ball to just go to the rim and get a basket, he was able to do that. But then at the same time, he was able to defer to Smart. Shane Larkin had nice stretches on the ball for this game. I mean, Irving has really bought into the Celtics concept of having multiple ball handlers, different looks to show the defense on the ball. And this guy who just has superstar pedigree in this league has no problem passing it up for other guys. And on a night like tonight, I mean, he had a lot of turnovers himself. That last one I thought was inexcusable, but he played good within the flow of the game tonight, Taylor.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that I knew was going to happen. I've been a Kyrie guy, you know, since he was at Duke. I don't like Duke. But, like, I followed Kyrie's entire career. And I've never thought he was only the isolation scorer that Cleveland made him. And I think you're seeing him evolve into, or at least you're seeing all of his skills on display each and every night. And I also think that if you read the articles written about him and just read his postgame quotes, you realize that this is what he's wanted all the time. Before the season, in a Mass Live article, he said, "I'm excited to be a real point guard and not just an isolation scorer." And then as you look at the progression, he talks about how smart Brad Stevens is and how he trusts Brad and trusts everything that Brad does in the Celtics system. And even something as simple as his quote a couple of days ago about his minutes in Cleveland, how he would just go to Ty Lue and tell him, "Hey, I'm ready to go back in." But in Boston, Brad tells him, "No, you're going to sit for this amount of time, and then you'll go back in." I think he's always wanted this structure and this system that the Celtics have, and now that he has it, he's completely bought in, and he's flourishing in it.
And, Taylor, you can't tell me that those types of quotes he doesn't want to – he wants those quotes to get out because he wants – When Horford's deal is up in a few years and say he's older, and when the Celtics want to add more pieces or whatever it is, you want to create that. He wants to create that culture here where everybody kind of already knows it if they're plugged into the league with some of these NBA guys. But guys who might be kind of questioning Brad Stevens is the real deal or not, when you hear stuff like that from Kyrie Irving, that makes other guys want to come play with this the Celtics team, especially with Brad Stevens.
Absolutely, and if you couple that, his quotes, with just the results, you know, taking this team from his first year when it was the Rondo and Jeff Green experiment to last year going to the conference finals and this year being the one seed in the East as they were last year, the results. And then you have the star point guard who has, you know, performed at the highest level, you know, just lauding Brad. It looks really good for other players. It looks like a promising place to be.
All right, guys. 347-215-7771 is your number to call tonight. I'm sure the call-ins are going to be flooded. Just had a little opening segment. Andrew Rubino's here with us, Taylor McLeod, the Massachusetts crew, the Syracuse crew, and I'm your host tonight, Bobby Manning. We're going to get into everything tonight. I mean, Terry Rozier was amazing. Al Horford had the big shot late. We kind of got into him already. Jason Tatum, very steady night again on the wing, playing 40 minutes. And even getting into the bench for some creative use of Shane Larkin and Terry Rozier tonight to play big in this win, too. You can't really get this win tonight without perfect execution. And everybody had a little bit of an impact tonight. Even Aaron Baines, who when the whole team was negative tonight, he came in and put a big burst into this positive stretch for the Celtics. Midway through that fourth quarter, into the late stages, he was the only positive player on the Celtics. And he really helped shore up the defense tonight. And a lot of missed shots by the Rockets helped out too tonight. You can't do this without some luck. But all in all, the execution in the final 30 seconds, the performance Irving was able to give, the comeback shot down the stretch of Al Horford and then Marcus Smart, making four crucial plays in 30 seconds to win this game. It was really on him tonight. I mean, I'm sure the Tony Award's going to Marcus Smart tonight. There's no doubt about that. Your call on tonight is sponsored by the good folks over at DraftKings Fantasy Basketball fans. The season's back. We're almost halfway there. And every single night is an opportunity for you guys to win huge cash prizes over at DraftKings. Tonight, I mean, if you had Kyrie Irving tonight and your DraftKings league, you're looking pretty good. So, tonight, tomorrow, let's get into this and get you guys some money because through CLNS Media, you're going to have an opportunity to play DraftKings tonight, tomorrow, whenever you want, and put down a deposit for your share of $10,000 in total prizes. Don't wait. Use the code CLNS at DraftKings.com now to choose your lineup, and you can seriously win huge cash tonight. That's code CLNS only at DraftKings.com. The game inside the game, and DraftKings, the great thing about it, Taylor, if you get an injury, I mean, I'm in a full-season fantasy league, and Paul Millsap's just been killing me. You don't have to worry about that in DraftKings. Every single night, you're drafting a new team. It's a new season night by night. That's the beauty of fantasy, daily fantasy. And you're going to be playing for money over at DraftKings. I know all of us, you know Peter, he loves putting money on the line, and you can do that over at Fantasy Sports through DraftKings. Thanks to them for sponsoring this episode, and they're sponsoring our call-in. So let's get into it tonight. I see you all on the line. We're not going to keep you waiting too long, but make your thoughts succinct and quick. We got a lot of people going in and out tonight. We'd love to chop it up for a long time, but tonight's not that kind of night. 339, our good buddy Vinny is with us to start off the night on the DraftKings call line. What's up, Vinny?
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing?
Good, Vinny. What did you think of that game?
I thought it was what I expected from the Rockets for the first quarter. And then from the second quarter on, it was like I walked into an alternate universe, and I did something good to get the karma gods on my side for once. Like I built up my karma points for this one. It was really good. I earned this victory. I earned this good day for the Celtics. I earned it.
So, Vinny, did we miss anything in the opening segment? I tried to hit on all the factors of this comeback, but there was so much going on. I mean, did you see anything we didn't talk about?
What about the two refs today, and one of them was Tony Brothers?
Yeah, I think the two ref thing is really important because I think that might be part of why Harden got on that step back so forth, because normally he's all driving and kicking, but also driving and getting to the line. And I think once he realized he wasn't going to get all the calls because of the two ref system, he kind of relied really heavily on that step back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that step back, that he took this horrible shot in the fourth quarter, right before those two fouls, like this long three that was horrible. It was like he just didn't care. It was like, let's get this over with and go home. I'm tired. Like, I don't know what the heck that was.
His demeanor in this game in the second half just blew me away. Like, I saw that too, and I think a lot of people watching this, it just looked like he didn't give a fuck. Like, he did not care how this game was going to turn out tonight. And I know that it's a long regular season and they're going through injuries and this and that and they've been winning a lot of games, but, I mean, you expect that from the Warriors. That Rockets team,
yeah.
I know they're better than 80% of the league, but you're gunning for an all-time great team. You got to be locked in night after night. And
yeah.
A night like tonight scares me. I think they have a good shot to beat the Warriors, but a night like tonight just brings me back, as Bino said, to that Spurs series where Harden just completely checked out.
I think Harden was concussed, though, for that series. He had to be concussed. That's what I was hearing for this time. I don't think he was concussed. I don't think anyone dinged him on the head, right?
No.
If someone dinged him on the head, we should just keep doing that. Marcus Smart should ding him on the head every time in the first quarter. Get away with it. Like, Hanley Ramirez would have a good first half to the season, and someone would give him a concussion, and then he would suck. That happened twice, so somebody should do that. Smart, and I'm kidding. No one should do that to anybody, but you know.
And here we are again with Smart. How many times have we talked about on this show all the downsides, and then it seems like every 10 games we have a night like tonight where he just completely takes over the game down the stretch with those big plays. Does this alter your thinking about this offseason at all with him? You can't even see any other guy making plays like that down the stretch.
No, not at all. Not at all. Today was the night that you impulsively want to give Marcus Smart your money, your mom's money, your dad's money, your uncle's money, all the money, your inheritance, because he held James Harden to like 7-22 shooting. And Harden is a little inefficient, but that was a great night by Marcus. It flummoxed me why he wasn't on the bench when Harden was on the bench. I would have just matched up their minutes because Smart's such a liability on offense. And it's like Tito can't do that. Terry Rozier can't do that, but you would rather have Tito long-term than Smart on like a $50 million contract or something crazy. But this is one of the nights where you just want to hug him. This is it. But this is the night that he just makes you forget all of your flaws, right? How did he do this?
I mean, I'm going to open this up to Taylor and Bino now. First, Taylor, it just blows my mind that we're back at this where, I said it right to Vinny 2 seconds ago. I don't think any other player could make those plays down the stretch that Smart did. It's that hidden value in his game that you really have to look deep to find that makes you say, maybe this guy is worth keeping this summer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you and I, or mostly I and Nick Sesento especially, have been very hard on Marcus Smart this season, and we've often cited his shooting percentage as our main source of grief with him. But like Vinny said,
our main gripe.
Thank you. I was, you know, you're a wordsmith more so than I. You know, like Vinny's completely right. Nights like tonight, you forget about that poor shooting percentage, and you forget about, you know, the crazy stuff he does wrong, and you think about only the stuff he does right. But as the season has gone on and the Celtics have gotten into the swing of things, I don't think his status as a liability on offense is really the truth anymore. He's taking his shots within the system. He can get to the rim. He's a good passer. I'm not saying he's an above-average offensive player or a plus offensive player, but he does what the team needs him to, and I think he's done a really good job of, you know, maintaining – a steady pace rather than having these nights where he shoots like 7 or 8 threes and all of them hit the top of the backboard. And, you know, instead he's taking only a couple threes and he's getting to the rim and passing and having more of a complete game that, you know, it stays within the system. So I think Marcus Smart I'm changing my tune from previous shows, but I think he's one of the most important Celtics.
How can you tonight?
I know. And they simply don't win this game if Marcus Smart's not on the roster. It just doesn't happen.
I know our boss here, Nick Joso, has been very hard on Smart, too. I'd love to hear from him tonight because on a night, the Smart's impact comes in swings. You're going to have those nights where he just looks terrible. He's taking crazy shots. He's turning the ball over. And you wonder, like, is it really worth the little things? Do the little things add up? And Brad Stevens talked a lot about the little things. That's one of his famous quotes after they lost to Cleveland in 2015. He was like, once you see the impact of the little things, you realize they aren't little things or something to that effect. And tonight was the perfect example of that. Down the stretch, in the final 30 seconds, Rockets blew that timeout, trying to get the ball in bounds. Great out-of-bounds defense by the Celtics tonight, particularly by Smart. And then they score those two baskets. Smart gets right inside. Smart swings it back to Tatum, who was layup line at the rim. I mean, the Rockets just left the rim wide open on those last three possessions. And that opened the opportunity for the Celtics. Rockets blew that timeout. Harden hits his free throws. Smart creates those two baskets. You're within one. And then the Rockets have to get it in bounds. They can't do it twice. And then, you know, Horford has his issues at the free throw line to end that game. Rockets are still within striking distance down one. And they have no timeouts left. And that just shows you right there, the little things, burning those timeouts, Smart making those two plays right there. The Rockets never had a chance to finish this game by putting the ball in the bucket. And that sealed the deal tonight. And Smart was right in the middle of all of those plays, every single one, besides Horford missing the two free throws. But that's another story. Bino, how are you feeling about Smart tonight? Are you going to have the gut reaction that me and Taylor are having?
Here's the thing. I've been Team Marcus Smart for a while, so it's a little nice like tonight. I just sit back and I'm just like, "Yep, okay, join the bandwagon." But anyways, on a more serious note, look, I feel like Marcus Smart is that guy, and I've said this on past shows. He's the Dennis Rodman. He's the current modern Draymond Green of a championship team, where you need him to do, like you said, the little things. He needs to bring the grit. He needs to bring the toughness. He needs to annoy the James Hardens of the world. I mean, Harden. If you really think about it, Harden was in a groove. He was smoking he was just playing like an assassin, absolutely putting in all his shots, having no troubles at all. And then he got out of his groove when Marcus Smart got into it with him. I want to say in like the middle of the third quarter, if Bobby, you usually are better about the specifics of those types of plays, but I'm pretty sure it was in the middle of the third when Marcus really got into it with Harden a little bit. You could tell Harden was disrupted, and it's very hard, Bobby, when you have these professional scorers like the Hardens of the world, where they're so used to just having their way, and there's those couple guys in the league that can really bother guys, and they just get off their game, and I feel like Smart's one of those guys. I mean, Harden looked noticeably rattled and like annoyed when Smart was on him. So I love how Marcus Smart brings that, and I love how it kind of changed the pace of this game, got the Rockets out of their rhythm a little bit, and all of a sudden Harden's not facilitating well, and then Eric Gordon's hitting less shots, and then all of a sudden that's the reason for this great Celtics comeback. So I guess to wrap up the point, go Marcus Smart.
They do not win this game tonight without Smart. So thanks, Vinny, for the call. Thanks for plugging us on Twitter tonight, 347-215-7771, the DraftKings call line. Use code CLNS to get a free contest on DraftKings with your first deposit. We're going to keep rolling here. 862 is with us. Who we got on the line? 862. All right, just listening. 740 is with us here on the Celtics Post Game Show.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey,
what's going on?
Who we got here?
This is Miley Tomko from Ohio.
Oh, what up, Miley?
Not much. How about you guys?
Not much. What did you think of tonight's game?
We are in jubilation.
Not going to lie. From tonight's game, when we was like playing awful that first half, I didn't think we were going to come back because we were down by, what, like 28 or something like
26.
That?
26. Yep, 26.
Okay, 26. And it just didn't seem like the first half, like we couldn't make anything and just fouled too many times. And then the second half, they played really well and had a better effort and actually played like Celtics basketball again. So I was pretty happy with the way they played the second half.
Yeah, we were too. And how important do you think Marcus Smart is to playing Celtics basketball?
I think he's really important because I think he brings a lot on the defensive end. And, I'm not really sure about his shooting because his shooting has been questionable lately, but I think he brings a lot on the defensive side of the ball.
Absolutely.
Help. So.
It's interesting. Miley's talking about Celtics basketball, and Bino, I'm going to ask you, we're almost halfway through the season. It's amazing. We're going to play half the game through December. Do the Celtics have an identity in your eyes yet? I mean, Brad Stevens said tonight he learned a lot about this team tonight, win or lose, even if they came up short. This comeback effort is going to show him a lot about what this group is. Whether it's lineups, whether it's guys' roles, whether it's just this team as a whole having an image in your eyes, are they there yet?
No, I think that's the exciting thing and makes people really optimistic about this year, Bobby, is that they're 29-10, they're first in East, though. They're, like you said, almost halfway through, and you really don't know where you're going to get with this team when they have to play less games over the next half of the season, and they have some time off, and they can really actually come together and practice as a team and have Brad Stevens go to work and have him as the guru as have him implement the things that he does as the basketball guru that he is. And I think it's one of those things, too, that this type of potential in the Celtics, as crazy as it is to say as they're the number one seed because you don't really know what they are, in my opinion, I think this scares Cleveland more than any other team does. Because with the Raptors, Sam Sheehan brought this up the other day. He was like, well, Rubino, he goes, the Raptors really scared me. And I was like, Sam, look, everybody knows what the Raptors are. Everybody knows what their ceiling is. I'm not scared of what the Raptors are. Yes, they're a good team. They have Lowry and DeRozan, but it's not like you don't know how to scout them. There's not been a point in the season, Bobby. I mean, obviously there's been a stretch of games here and there, but they really haven't had the full rotation of the Kyrie, Brown, Tatum, Horford, Marcus Morris starting lineup, and with Smart off the bench, with Terry off the bench, everybody healthy, the cog in the machine. You've had to have weird guys step up in weird places sometimes, and Smart sometimes has to start. So I really think if this team can get healthy, Bobby, and they're really going to find their identity, and they could really play with that house money come playoff time. And that's just kind of my take on where their identity is and the idea that it's a good thing we don't really know what's going to come of the Celtics team. Because, Bobby, if you told me right now they're going to lose in the second round a series to the Raptors or they're going to go to the finals, I think either way you would believe me, because if I had a magic like genie ball and I could see in the future, you would believe me either way, Bobby, because this team has shown both of those kind of traits, and a night like tonight makes you think that this team can go pretty far. So
we're going to keep tearing through calls here on the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. We're on until midnight tonight. Screw it. We're going all the way. Special edition tonight. Celtics comeback postgame show. We got a long one for you guys. So it's going to be one of those throwback games where we just go all night long. And luckily, you guys are here with us. 941. I think I know who this is. Who we got here?
Yeah, you know who it is.
Oh, yeah. It's our man, Nick Sesento, sneaking in from behind the boards. Sesento, we had our Marcus Smart conversation. It's time for you to let it rip on him.
I can't take this, you know what I'm saying, this overreaction that Boston Celtics fans just seem to be prone to after every single loss or every single win. It's like Marcus Smart fans are becoming the most annoying fans in Boston sports fandom, because they'll come up with excuses for why he sucks ass for four games, and then he does something fantastic like he does tonight, and suddenly that makes him, you know what I'm saying, the grand master of all things Boston Celtics. Yes, he had a fantastic game tonight, and yes, he had the key plays that got under James Harden's skin, but that was as much James Harden losing his control. And yes, Marcus Smart got under his skin, but James Harden, before that second offensive foul that turned the ball over for the second time, he was literally pushing Marcus Smart halfway to midcourt with the ball, trying to back him up when they didn't have a timeout to even call. That should have been a delay of game warning for James Harden pushing the ball up there. It only took that. That's probably why the referee called that foul against that second offensive foul against James Harden to begin with, because he was pushing Marcus Smart up the court, holding the ball, basically delaying the game, and then finally gets those calls. Didn't anybody notice within that last minute of the game, Kyrie Irving driving, the Boston Celtics needing only 2 points. They were down by two. Kyrie Irving driving to the paint. There's a closeout shutting him in. He kicks it out to a wide-open Marcus Smart, and as soon as Marcus Smart grabs the ball, what did every single Boston Celtics fan say when Marcus Smart grabbed that ball and shot it? Oh, God, no. Or, oh, shit, or something like that. And what did he do? He bricked the hell out of that shot. So, yes, I give Marcus Smart – all the credit for what he did tonight, but it is so cheap for these Marcus Smart fans to come in here and be like, well, I've been a Marcus Smart fan forever. I knew he does this once every 5 or 6 games, and in the meantime, he's having 7 turnovers. He's shooting 3 for 15, 1 for 7 from 3. He's at some point, you have to have some consistency. And when I come on here, yes, he has a fantastic game, but when you go from having a fantastic game to then hearing him compared to Dennis Rodman, as if he's the key to a championship team like Dennis Rodman.
Nick, I've done this on other shows with you. Nick, I've compared him. I haven't compared him. I said that he is the type of defensive guy that you need on a championship team.
No, he's not.
Don't put words in my mouth, number one. Stop so.
Whatever you're saying, whatever words that do come out is not true. Marcus Smart is a nice player.
Nick, these are the same convos I've had with you when you've hosted, so don't call in and now try to twist my words and say I haven't had the same points. I've been a Marcus Smart guy this whole year. I always have been. I think we should re-sign him. He played well tonight, and you're twisting my words, so I'm good with that.
Well, I didn't say anybody in particular. I said Marcus Smart fans in general. If the shoe don't fit, why are you Cinderella, bruh? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just pointing out that Marcus Smart is a nice player. Is Marcus Smart a Dennis Rodman key to an NBA championship type player? No, he's not. He's a James Posey type player is what he is. And that's nice. I like having a James Posey type player. Do I want the Boston Celtics to pay $12 million for him when there's going to be other free agents on the market? If it comes down to getting a free agent that can make an impact on the game more than just, you know, once every 5 games doing something like he did tonight or diving for the ball or playing rough like that, that's cool. But if there are other free agents on the line, why spend that money for Marcus Smart when you can get somebody else that's going to make the team better? This team badly needs scoring off the bench. And if it wasn't for a guy like Terry Rozier, who nobody ever gives credit to, he's just kind of, well, he's not Marcus Smart, so forget Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier does as much in literally half the minutes as Marcus Smart does. He just doesn't have those standout plays like offensive fouls that he drew from James Harden. But he did hit some very huge shots. He was grabbing some huge rebounds. He was stealing some or grabbing some loose balls. Terry Rozier was as much a factor in the Boston Celtics coming back and winning this game as Marcus Smart was. It's just so easy for anybody, and I'm not sticking to anybody else, but it's just so easy to point out those one or two plays and say, yeah, that's it. Yes, it is. But who had to hit the shot to tie the game? Al Horford still had to hit the shot.
It's not one or two plays,
Do they win the game without Smart tonight, though? That's my question.
Do they win the game without Terry Rozier, though?
That's a good point,
you know what I'm saying?
Too,
like, you can say that about almost any player. Do they win the game without Marcus Morris?
Yeah, but Nick, the thing is that tonight that Terry Rozier hasn't played consistent this whole year. You're acting like Terry Rozier has done this every single game.
But Marcus Smart hasn't either.
Nick, don't counter with a guy that has been just as inconsistent as Marcus Smart. When you host shows and you say that, oh, the Celtics need bench scoring, they don't have any bench scoring, and Terry Rozier is a huge part of that, don't say that Terry Rozier has been as consistent as Kyrie. You're acting like he's as consistent,
one of the most consistent guys
on the team. You that's what your rebuttal was, so.
No, my rebuttal is everybody heaps this praise on Marcus Smart, but then acts like Terry Rozier ain't shit or Terry Rozier is just an average player. We can give or take Terry Rozier. Who cares? Where Marcus Smart is elevated to godlike status based on performances like this once every 5 or 6 games. If he had performances like this once every 2 or 3 games, that would be one thing, but it's like this performance, and then watch, for the next 3 or 4 or 5 games, he's going to shoot, you know, 1 for 8 from 3 and, you know, 3 for 15 from the field. It's just, and then have 7 turnovers or something else like that. And shutting players down, did he shut down Bradley Beal? Did he shut down John Wall? What happened did he shut down Kemba Walker? What happened in that bad Bulls loss? If he can guard every position on the court, why did Nikola Mirotic eat his lunch? Why did Bobby Portis eat his lunch? Because he just can't do everything that his fans say that he does. The reason I counter with Terry Rozier is not to say Terry Rozier is anywhere in the league of Kyrie Irving or that Terry Rozier deserves so much credit for anything else. It's basically a comparison of those two players that there's this overwhelming, you know, heaps of praise for Marcus Smart and nothing for Terry Rozier, when in reality both of them are needed for wins like this, for scrappy, gritty wins. And yet, it's an emotional thing, really, is what it is. And I don't like analyzing basketball based on emotions. And that's really
what
Marcus Smart
is
an emotional guy.
Nick Taylor here.
What's up?
All right. You and I have been pretty critical of Marcus Smart over the past, you know, 2-3 months that I've been doing this. You know, you and I have gone in on him. In the past month,
yeah.
Marcus Smart shooting 38.4% from three.
That's
better
good.
Than J.J. Redick, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Kemba Walker,
come
and
the numbers.
That's good. I'm glad that he's finally shooting. I'm glad that he's finally doing that. If he can continue doing that for the rest of the season, then there's maybe an argument. But I don't think that the early season play, especially at this point in the time, for $12 million or whatever else it is, and yes, if he continues to do that, sure, pay him. If there's no other free agent out there, sure, pay him. I'm not hating on Marcus Smart as being a garbage player. I'm saying that it's just too easy to heap praise on him after a game like this when you look at him in totality of what he does, and he's just not as great as – he's overrated. He's the most overrated player in Boston sports right now, period. Name me a more overrated player in Boston sports.
Xander Bogaerts.
All of Boston sports. You can use the Patriots and the Bruins and the Red Sox as well. Name me a more overrated player.
I can do this forever. Chris Hogan.
Rickhead, really?
We're not gonna shift over other sports as tempting as it is tonight. But I do You both have good points. And the thing about Smart is tonight in particular. I think you did see him shift his approach a little bit. I know you did have that point about the shot that he bricked, Nick, but you also had a lot of plays throughout this game where he finally hit the hole. There was one other kick out to the corner where it felt like everyone was expecting him to throw it up as he usually does, and he got inside, shifted around a few other guys, and slammed it home. First time I've seen him do that in a while. And with Smart,
I'd love to see him do more of that. That's the aspect of his game that he's lacking. He can't shoot threes, and he really doesn't finish at the hoop the way that you know that he can, because you've seen him that one putback a couple of years ago where he put that putback jam where he fell on his back, and he just got up out of nowhere. And this is, you know, chubby Marcus Smart, not skinny Marcus Smart doing this stuff. Marcus Smart can do things. He just, for some reason, goes on these, you know, three or four, you know, game, you know, disappearing acts where he just chucks up bad shots and lets whoever he's guarding burn him. That's not to say other players don't. That's not to say Terry Rozier doesn't get burnt. But let's not just take the one game and then all of a sudden, you know, crown him, you know, King Marcus, when in reality, you know, on the totality, he's an average player. He's averaging Evan Turner stats. You know what I'm saying? With maybe in the past several games or whatever,
yeah,
maybe slightly better three-point shooting.
That's,
but even Evan Turner has.
His role on the team is to be gritty, Nick. His role on the team is to be gritty, is to make important shots once in a while. And what did he do tonight? You keep bringing up that miss. What did he follow it up with 40 game seconds later? He made a big layup to put them only down one. So you're acting, you're bringing up points that can easily be countered. I mean, he makes big plays, and his role on this team isn't to have 15 points a game. They have plenty of offense. His whole thing is the little.
Do they, though?
Why does Brad Stevens come out and say, I love how Brad why does Brad Stevens come out and say, I love how Marcus Smart does the little things. I love how this team is so big and understands that it's not just the producing numbers. It's just as much about producing that grit. If you want to win a championship, if the Celtics want to win a championship, they need guys like Marcus Smart to be that tough guy off the bench. And his best role is off the bench, not when he's starting in a night like tonight and he has pressure on him. So I think that some of the things you're saying can easily be countered. So.
Yeah, Brad Stevens said the same thing about Evan Turner, though, doing the little things. I mean,
yeah,
that's great. Doing the little things does not warrant a big contract in every circumstance.
Yeah.
He has
that's
to
my,
do more.
That's my
because
point right there.
Because at the end of the day, who had to hit that basket after Marcus Smart got that first offensive foul? Who had to put the ball in the hoop at the end of the day to put the Celtics up by a point?
Yeah, but that's not
Al
Marcus'
Horford.
Role, Nick.
Okay, so then this is the constant refrain. That's not his role. Well, then his role is what? To dive for basketballs and get offensive fouls that are rarely called?
Nick, there's five
players
in the court, and he made a huge
How many
play.
Times has this ever happened in an NBA game that two offensive fouls are called in a row based on something like that? If you're gonna base a contract on those two plays, you know what
you're
I'm saying?
Though.
That's a very
that's
small,
not
that's
what
a limited credential.
You're talking about him. You're talking about, and you know, Nick, that I've been hard on Marcus Smart. I'm not a huge Marcus Smart, you know, fanboy. I like Marcus Smart as a Celtic, but I've been critical of him in the past. But it's not just those two plays. It's him taking on Harden for an entire second half, one of the best players in the NBA, and really making a dent in his productivity. It's him hitting that and-one layup. It's him being a good passer. Him, you know, at the end of the day, it is those two plays.
But it's not just two plays to look at. It's more than that. And I agree, you don't get a big contract because of little things. But when you keep making these winning plays, and you keep – every time we talk about who made the winning plays, it's always Marcus Smart. If it's not the winning buckets, but the winning plays. It's always Marcus Smart.
Not always, but a lot of the time. Oh, Terry Rozier, that's always Marcus Smart. I mean, that was legitimately a game-winning defensive play and a game-winning offensive play. And Terry Rozier did something very similar in this game. It wasn't a game-winning shot, but it was there. So, I mean, yes, he does those things, but you asked, you mentioned something about who was it that hit him hitting the and-one layup. Name me another time Marcus Smart this season has hit an and-one layup. When was the last time Marcus Smart did that?
I made a mistake. It wasn't an and-one. He drew a bunch of contact. They didn't call the foul. But it still brought him within one. And I'm not going to go through when he's hit, like, hard layups the entire season. The Marcus Smart issue doesn't need to be as divisive as it is. He's not as bad as his haters want him to be, and he's not as good as his fans want him to be. He is a good player. He's a solid player on a very good team.
Yes, but when you use words like Dennis Rodman and Draymond, well, I don't care about Draymond Green. He can be Draymond Green, but look at the. I mean, even Dennis Rodman. Marcus Smart does similar things, but not to the degree that Dennis Rodman did them, or to the statistical output that Dennis Rodman did them. And Dennis Rodman was even worse a shooter than Marcus Smart. Not that was Dennis Rodman's job. Of course, this is going to be issues to everybody.
The tricky thing about Smart is the fact that his game is defensive. And when it comes to offense, you look at an offensive player like Irving, you can judge his offense at night to night by the shooting, the turnovers, the assists, da-da-da-da-da. Defense is just so much harder to quantify, and that's what you're expecting Smart to produce. He fills this defensive niche for this team. And that really is his role at the end of the day for this team, is to be that defensive centerpiece. So there's more of a macro judgment with Smart than there is a game-to-game judgment. And we get it, you know, you just have to keep an eye on over these long-term stretches how well he does hold the defense together. And I do think, Nick, you have a legitimate gripe with Smart about the fact that over this last month, they haven't been a good defensive team. And you gotta wonder, how much can you put on one guy? And if you can't put that much on one guy, is he worth signing to money that you're paying for him to be a defensive guy? Because I think Beno and Taylor have great points. His role is his role. It's taking the charges. It's making the gritty plays. It's doing this and that. But when you're giving a guy a contract for years to come, Kevin O'Connor taught me this great, great saying about signing guys to contract. You're projecting future value when you're signing a guy to an extension.
Absolutely.
Or re-signing a guy. And you have to anticipate growth in Smart's game. You have to anticipate him having a bigger role than he has right now. And Chisento, I think even tonight, on one of Smart's biggest nights, you have a point in the fact that he's still filling a very niche role for this team. The harder question to quantify is, over a large stretch of the game, does that add up to this team being better? I mean, they're still number one, number two defensively in the league over the course of the season. This team has shown that they can be great defensively, and he's part of that. But the question is it, can you put it all on him? Can you go to him against a Mirotić? Can you push him to the limit defensively? This Marcus Smart value question is just so hard to answer in my eyes, because it's so much harder than looking at an offensive player and saying,
Bobby,
you know, he can hit this many shots.
Let's use a recent example of a Boston Celtics defensive stopper that everybody in Boston loved. He was adored. Many fans cried when he was traded for Marcus Morris. And a lot of people said, what's the Boston Celtics defense going to do without him? What is the Boston Celtics defense, how can they possibly be as good defensively without Avery Bradley? And who's thinking about Avery Bradley right now? Who is thinking about Avery Bradley during that 16-game winning streak? The same thing can be said of Marcus Smart. Sure, Marcus Smart is a different type of defensive player, but I think that all this work – he's the guy that's going to be the key to a chance. No, he's a James Posey. He's a guy that can get out there. He can play, you know, gritty defense. He can do those things. But at the end of the day, he is a role player. And every time we have to quantify or qualify what it is that he does by saying, well, that's not his role. That's not his role either. That's not his role either. His role is to
that
do this.
Point.
At some point, he has to add a couple of other dimensions for him to be worth a double-figure contract. He has, if he's going to be a 3-and-D guy, hit some freaking threes. Avery Bradley learned to do it.
Over the past month, he has. I just read you the numbers.
Exactly.
He's
Thank
improving.
You, Taylor.
Yeah, yes, yes, and, he, and you know what? He also shot threes during the preseason. Then what happened? I mean, these are streaks.
Yeah,
you're using exceptions to disprove the rule.
The
when you look at the overall broader picture for 4 years in the league, or 3.5 years in the league, he's not a great 3-point shooter. So in the past month, okay, he's shooting better in the past month. But over the course of his NBA career and over the course of the season, he's not that great of a 3-point shooter.
I never said he was. I said he's improving.
Cecento, always fun arguing Marcus Smart here.
Appreciate it.
I mean, we can call this Marcus Smart show at this point. I mean, every single night is a Marcus Smart explosion, a Marcus Smart argument. I mean, this guy is one of the more divisive Celtics players we've seen over the last 10 years, I'd say. Maybe as much as anybody in my lifetime. People go to war over Marcus Smart. And Dino and Nick just did right there. That was fun, Dino. Nice comeback. Nice, you know, you're new to the show, so I'm going to give you credit, Dino, for being a bulldog right there and going right back at a seasoned veteran of Nick Cecento.
Appreciate it, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Nick, for the call. Thanks, as always, for your efforts here. We have a few more callers we're going to get to over the last 20 minutes through midnight. Wow. Smart is just so hard to quantify, guys. You know, here's my final point on Smart. I think at this point, he's going to be back no matter what. I think when you just, you know, we can get into the arguments, we can get into this and that on Smart, but if you just look at the situation Celtics are in right now, only 3 or 4 teams, as it currently stands, can make him an offer sheet. And those teams are the Hawks, a few other bottom-feeding teams at the moment, who, you know, you wonder, I mean, sometimes those bad teams do toss big money at guys, but is Smart really the kind of guy a team like the Hawks are going to throw money at? That's my big question right there. And then now, you know, we have this Anthony Davis trade talk circulating. It's kind of bogus this season, as Dino's gone over a few times on here himself. But going forward, if you have Marcus Smart at $15, $16 million, he becomes a very easy piece to match a trade in. And I think he already has a little bit of value as a trade piece. And if you can up his contract a little bit more to where you can match salaries easier, he's going to be valuable going forward. I think Smart has more value to the Celtics than any other team. And he has a lot of value as a trade piece still. So I just, at this point, I think there's no way he's not going to be back next summer. I don't know what you think about that, Taylor.
I think you're right. Unless someone, you know, gives him a crazy opportunity, I think you're definitely right. And I think they want him back. He's important to this team. I know that we all blow up about him. We all talk about him constantly. But he is important to this team and the future of this team. I don't want some guy who's going to score like 20 points a game but not make any winning plays and down the stretch. Like, I'd rather take Marcus Smart, who I know will be there in winning time and crunch time, than some guy who's going to give me 20.
Hey Bobby,
yeah.
I have a question. I have a question for you, and we could do a 3-hour podcast on Marcus Smart. So I hope you don't mind. I'm changing the subject, but with Jason Tatum tonight, Bobby, tonight's the night where I'm like, besides Kyrie, he's untouchable to me. Like, how could we ever consider? How can Ainge ever consider? I'm not saying he has. I'm just saying that it's nights like tonight with, I don't know whether it be Anthony Davis or another piece out there that maybe Ainge has his eye on that nobody even knows about. Is there any way you can justify potentially trading Tatum? I mean, Bobby, he's 19 years old. He has 19 points tonight, and he was an absolute stud down the stretch with that huge block on Harden. He stripped him, and I want to say in the middle of the third quarter. And I mean, overall, even when the Celtics were down in the first half, he was playing consistently well. He never gets frazzled. He's 19 years old. I mean, Bobby, he's literally born the same month as you in March of 98. He is going to turn 20 this March. I mean, Bobby, there's no way you can tell me that there's any player out there that we should trade for, and you throw in Jason Tatum to that into a trade for any player in the league right now. He is a 19-year-old. He is a stud. I don't know. Maybe you guys totally disagree, but to me, tonight's the night where it's like Tatum is walking down Harden, and he scores 19 points in a huge comeback win and was one of the only consistent guys. I mean, what do you guys make of that?
Yeah. It is cold outside, and Jason Tatum is ice cold right now to start the season in a good way. I mean, he is scoring 15 to 19 points every single night for this team at a low usage. 7% usage. He's below Shane Larkin in usage. He's below Horford, Irving, Rozier, Morris. Even Gershon Yabusele in the little minutes he plays has a higher usage rate than Jason Tatum. This guy really picks his spot. And the big question now on him, and Brad Stevens said it after the game last week, one of the games last week, that they got to start slowly upping his usage rate. And, you know, I was at the Garden last week. We were asking him about his usage rate, about how aggressive he's being. And he said something interesting. He said, Kyrie Irving, Al Horford are great players, great facilitators, and it's easy to play off those guys. And he said that's his role right now, is to play off those guys. And I don't think that the single one of us who doesn't feel like he could be giving them a little bit more in terms of usage, in terms of shots. And the only question left on him, he's consistent. He does a little bit of everything. He's definitely better defensively than we gave him credit for. Two steals tonight, two big steals. And the question is, if he gets up to 14, 15 shots a night, like Smart, Irving, Horford even, are these percentages going to hold?
I don't think his three-point percentage is going to hold. We're seeing it in the past couple games when he has been, you know, taking, you know, two or three more shots than his average of 9 a game. You know, he's not – his old three-point, like, strategy used to be, you know, get the pass, you know, up fake, dribble in, pass it back, swing it back around, then get it back to him when he's wide open. Now he's just taking them, and his percentage is dropping a little bit day by day. But at the same time, with that further aggression from him, you're seeing more buckets at the rim. So I don't think his 50% from three-point line is going to stand up, but I think he is a 40% plus three-point shooter in the NBA. As for his untouchability, I think the fact that he's so polished on offense and he's such a good defender makes him almost untouchable. There's obviously a few guys around the league that, you know, you have to trade for if you ever have the opportunity. I'm talking about, you know, the KDs of the world and LeBrons of the world. Those guys obviously aren't going to move in any trades, but you know, for a guy like that, you move Tatum. But the thing about Jason Tatum is he's making these jumps games to games that guys normally take 2 to 3 years to make. You know, he's becoming a better scorer in all aspects. He's becoming a better defender right in front of our eyes. And it's over the course of games and not years like you see with most players. So as for untouchability, in my opinion, he's outside of Kyrie, maybe he's the most untouchable player on the roster.
Let me ask you guys this. Davis isn't getting traded this year, so we're going to throw that out the window. It just doesn't work money-wise. The Pelicans aren't going to do it. But say things go the right way this summer, and the Pelicans are moving Davis for some reason or another, and they demand Tatum. They come to the table. They're standing firm on Tatum. He's the guy who has to be a part of it. Maybe you can save Brown. I don't know. Maybe you have to give up both of them. But Tatum's the ultimatum. Dino,
that's tough.
If that's the ultimatum, is Tatum moving for Davis?
Bobby, if it's this summer and I get an update on my phone from Woj that says that the Celtics traded Tatum for Anthony Davis, I would lock myself in a room for a week. I would be so upset. Because,
wow.
Bobby, we have future picks. Whether it's this. Summer, if the Lakers fall through that 2-5, or it's the summer after where the Kings are still going
to
stink because they have Zach Randolph and Vince Carter producing for them. Either way, Bobby, the Celtics are going to be able to draft a young big that can be the heir to Al Horford, and it's going to be one of those things where, like, why do we need to why would we need to trade Tatum for Davis if you can get somebody in the pipelines? I mean, obviously Davis is a great talent, don't get me wrong. If he was consistently healthy every year, Bobby, and absolutely producing, okay, then you have a better discussion. But Bobby, if we traded for Davis and then he was in and out and he was hurt because in and out of the lineup because he was hurt, and Tatum goes to the Pelicans and becomes a stud. I mean, I know it's kind of that sounds more like a hypothetical, but my point is that I would be really worried giving up Tatum. Well, that's exactly – okay,
yeah.
So that's a fair point what I'm saying. So to me, Bobby, I just can't see Ainge wanting to do that, considering that the Celtics have the assets to potentially not only do they have the assets to potentially draft a young center high to be that Horford and Davis type of whatever you want to call it, the centerpiece of the defense, they could also package those picks, Bobby, and go get a young center that maybe is less expensive and doesn't demand as many touches as a Davis, and you keep Tatum and Brown. And to me, that's more of the makeup of this team, the way they're built, and that's more of the makeup of the league right now. You want depth. I mean, you look at these great teams in the league, they have depth. It's not just those couple good players. I feel like that those Miami Heat teams with LeBron and D. Wade, Bobby, they had like three unbelievable players, and then it was like Eddie House was out there, and it's like, okay, like who else do you have for depth? Now these championship teams nowadays have one through nine, they're unbelievable. It's that they're stacked. It's brand. It's huge. You get names of guys that are talented that can score. So to me, I don't know about you, Taylor, but to me, you need to keep as many of the good young guys as you can with the depth, and that starts with Tatum and not taking the bait on a guy like Davis.
I agree. I also think that trading for Anthony Davis now or in the summer would go against this plan that, to make it a 76ers thing, the process that Danny Ainge is undertaking, because the way they're building things is they're making this young core with a little bit older, you know, good players like the Kyries and the Haywards to be sustainable and be a viable team when LeBron's gone. So if you trade for Anthony Davis now, obviously he's very young as well. But if you trade for Anthony Davis, that puts you in a complete win-now mode, and I think that defeats what Danny Ainge has been trying to build with this Celtics team. So whether or not that means that you do move Tatum or you don't move Tatum, I think an Anthony Davis trade at all would defeat what Danny Ainge has been trying to do.
That's a great. I like that, Taylor. I haven't even thought of it in that perspective, but that's great. Bob, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I'd go for it. You know, if I can't, we're obviously living in the hypothetical right now. I'm just, you know, I'm a big Jason Tatum guy, but I'm even bigger Anthony Davis guy.
Oh,
I think he's a game changer. I think he's one of the best anchors on defense we've seen since Kevin Garnett. I think he's Kevin Garnett in his scale of impact. And you're looking kind of
especially when he's hurt, huh?
You're always going to have injury concerns with guys. I think he has minor knee issues that come up here and there, and you'd have to manage that, of course. But he is just an unworldly talent on both ends of the floor. He impacts the game at the highest level. I love Tatum. I love the future prospect of him being a superstar. I mean, even Matt Moore, the chief Celtics hater, said this guy could be capable of 30 points a game one day. But it's, you know, right now, I look at this team and I say, if you have the chance, you get a gun for that championship. Next year, the year after that, maybe, with Kyrie Irving here, with Al Horford entering his final stages of his prime, with even Gordon Hayward coming back. Well, we'll see what Hayward looks like when he gets back. But if you can build that big three, big four right now, I think it's better to have a big three, big four, and then figure out the depth around it than it is to, you know, build these rookies, these younger players from the ground up. I mean, Jason Tatum's so ready to go, but being a especially when it comes to big men, you're not going to find a guy as ready to go as Davis was coming into this league. And even Davis had to take a whole year. Everybody forgets this. Davis had a lot of struggles his rookie year. He couldn't shoot from the mid-range. That really limited him offensively. As overwhelming defensively as he was, and he ran away with rookie of the year. It took him a year to develop into the monster he is, and he's one of the most special bigs we've ever seen. Other guys are going to take a while to come up. They're coming off the bench. I just don't think you can pass up a guy as good, as polished, as overwhelmingly impactful as Davis is. And that kind of player wins you championships. Kevin Garnett came here and instantly changed the defense, instantly changed the culture with his ability to impact both ends of the floor. I look at Davis as the same way. Like, I love Tatum, but I really love Davis.
Bobby, would you hypothetically speaking, say Hayward tries to come back and say it's the middle of next year, Hayward looks okay, Tatum's taking a great, even bigger step forward, and the Pelicans are not doing great next year, and Davis is available at the trade deadline, would you hypothetically do, or even say this offseason, would you do Hayward for Davis straight up or no? And build around Kyrie, Davis, and Tatum. I mean, that's freakish, and that's they're all what? They would be all under 26, 27. I mean, that to me would make more sense than shipping Tatum off because he would be 20 years old.
Well, that would be bold because you're trading a piece of your core who you just committed to, and I guess they just lost to LA, so me and you are going to roll for a second here. That's tough. I don't think there's a scenario with the Celtics trade Hayward, and I've heard that over the last couple of days. Would you gun to trade Hayward now just in case there is a fall-off? I wouldn't. You know, that would be like quintessential Danny Ainge. Get ahead on Hayward's possible regression post-leg injury and get value back for it. But I don't think the Pelicans do that, and I don't think the Celtics do that, if we're just being realistic about it. That's just too big of a gamble for the Pelicans. They're probably looking for young players and picks. And even though, you know, there is superstar upside with Hayward on the comeback if he is able to, I think it makes more sense for the Pelicans to take back young players, picks, and the Celtics solidify around the solid core. And I get your point right there because people underrate the fact that Hayward might not come back to the same level he was before. But even if he gets 80% there, 85% there, I think he's still a very important part of a big three.
Yeah, I understand that, Ball, but my big thing is, too, is don't get me wrong, I'm very optimistic about Hayward coming back. I'm hoping that he can be a huge piece, but what if Hayward's 21, 22 a game in Utah becomes 17, 18 here because of the bright lights, because of the pressure, because of a little bit of the ankle? People would start chirping. People would start saying, we're paying this guy max money. Tatum and Brown are young. They're good. I mean, look, I know it's the end of the show. And we're kind of getting into hypotheticals, and it's starting to turn into my dorm room and us just shooting it. But I mean, honestly, dude, it's not too far fetched to think that Bobby, this is where I disagree with you. If the Pelicans came and said we'll do Hayward for Davis straight up, or Hayward and a second rounder for Davis, I know Danny Ainge is like that, where he would do that in a second. I think it's just more about the Pelicans genuinely considering doing that. I don't know, Taylor, do you agree?
Yeah, that's the real question right there. Taylor, what do you think about Rubino's wild trade idea in the show? Hayward for Davis.
If the Pelicans general manager agreed to Anthony Davis for Gordon Hayward, he should be fired into the sun. That's horrible. Anthony Davis is a generational talent. He's one of the most incredible players. He's 7 feet tall, has a great mid-range game, has a decent handle, can get to the rim whenever he wants, is great on defense. He's got a unibrow, but we can look past that. Like,
yeah.
He's
I do
incredible. I love Gordon Hayward, and I loved him in Utah, and I really like his game. He's not Anthony Davis.
You know, I wasn't alive for but I wasn't really, like, immersed in sports like I am now. I want to talk to somebody who just lived through that Garnett era in Minnesota. And, of course, you know, Davis hasn't won an MVP like Garnett has. He hasn't pushed his team in the West Finals like Garnett did. And Garnett was just an otherworldly personality. Like, the scale of, like, emotional impact and just leadership and visual screaming and yelling and anger and intensity that Garnett shows is like 100-0 on Davis. Davis just has a pretty cool, even-keeled demeanor, and I think that's the big difference between those two. But when you look at their impact, their numbers through their best years before the injuries hit with Davis, I really put Davis and Garnett on that same scale, and I wonder what the image of Davis was. And I mean, Garnett was in Minnesota during that time when he hadn't won, when people weren't too sure about what his impact would be on a championship team, because Garnett, you know, he wasn't a winner before. He was just a stats guy. He was just a, you know, MVP guy playing out in Minnesota. But once he comes to the Celtics, pairs with other all-stars, a good coach in Doc Rivers, he becomes this legend. And I think, you know, you got to think about these situations. I don't think Davis is in the best situation to succeed.
Absolutely.
Right now. And he's done that in spite of his situation and New Orleans. I really hope, whether it's Boston, whether it's somewhere else, this guy just gets out of there, because it's never going to work for him there. Even this, I love that team. I hope they get into the playoffs and make some waves, because they're a lot of fun. You got Rondo, you got Etuan Moore, you got the two bigs in the wing era. But I just don't see it ever working for Davis there.
No, I think you're right. And like you said, I hope he gets to a better situation, whether that's Boston or somewhere else. I really.
Boston. My dream trade right now is re-up Marcus Smart at 14 to 16 million. Throw Yabusele in there. Brown probably for the $5 million right there. And then a pick as well. And you probably have to throw one more contract in there as well. I had this trade in front of me yesterday, but now I don't, of course, on the show. But Smart would be the centerpiece of that with his re-up contract. I'd like to keep Horford so he can have a pseudo big four here and the two bigs. That may not work. But we'll see.
If Horford's contract was up, Bobby, and the Celtics had Davis, I think he would take like a $12 million deal to stay and try to win a chip. Don't you?
That's a good question too. Horford's gonna be in this position for 2020, I believe. Yeah, 2020, because he's up the year before Davis is. He has a player option for 2020 that would get him $30 million, and that's no joke. Like, I know Horford's a team guy. I know he's all about the system and everything else, and he's not a typical superstar. But do you guys think he's going to pass up $30 million guaranteed in 2020?
Secure the bag, always.
Yeah. I know he's a team guy, but you got to secure that bag.
Doc, $30 million sets you up, your kids. Like, that's generational money. Like, you know.
Yeah, but Taylor, when you've already made what is it, 120? Did you get on the max, Bobby, or am I off?
Yeah, that includes that $30 million in the last year.
Oh,
though.
It does. So okay, so that's nine.
Yeah.
So is it 90? Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you're asking me, if you put $30 million in front of me, Bobby, I would take it so fast it wouldn't even be funny. But anyway.
There's nothing. Being a team player can make me not take $30 million.
People have thrown that at me. Will he opt out in 2020 and take less to set this up? I don't know. $30 million is a lot to pass up. And if he went out on the open market, if he got injured or whatever, and the Celtics had to dump him out, like, it's that deal, that it's that two-sided struggle where, you know, they're not going to cut you a break if you were in a bad position. So why should you cut the team a break if you're in a bad position? I don't think there's any way he drops off that $30 million. So that makes it tough for the Pelicans to take him back, because people keep talking about Horford as being a centerpiece in this trade. I know Horford's a great player, but situationally, his situation is very important to how successful he can be. Like, I don't know what the heck the Pelicans would do with him making $30 million in 2020. Like, that would be more of a hassle to them than a help. So I don't think Horford can be the centerpiece of the Davis trade, which makes it harder and maybe more unlikely at the end of the day, and maybe makes it more important that you put Tatum in it. It's a tough discussion. It's all about that.
I don't think you get Anthony Davis from Tatum. I don't think there's a scenario where that works.
We'll see. I mean, we're waiting on Jaylen Brown to come back as well. His season's been interesting. We didn't even get to him tonight because he didn't play. Understandable there. And the Celtics, are they back on track? We'll see. We'll have post-game every single show from now through January. We're getting it all set up with a new schedule for January, so we'll be back for those 12 games. And hopefully we'll do this roundtable again soon. But me, myself, I almost talked about myself in the third person. I would never do that. Taylor and Rubino. So, Rubino, it's always been Bino to me. Is Rubino the new trend? Because I've heard Obas telling you that. Sam Sheehan called you it on the air. Is Rubino an acceptable name for you?
That's more than fine, because that is my official last name on my birth certificate. But I will say, if you know me well, like you do, Bobster, you can call me Bino, because when people don't call me Bino, it's a sign of, oh, they don't really know me well. Like, Taylor, it kind of makes me sad, because I don't know if you call me Bino or not, but like, I want you to be on the level where you call me Bino, so hopefully
I absolutely
you get there.
Do. Absolutely. I'll call you Bino forever.
I love when your last name reaches a place of notoriety where people couldn't even imagine calling you by your first name. And
it's like when you have those one name people in the world, like Madonna, Rihanna,
LeBron.
Bino, LeBron.
LeBron, Drake.
Yeah, exactly.
Madonna,
Matt Magic.
And Bino. the newest in the one-name class. All right, let's wrap it right there. Celtics win, miracle comeback, 99-98. Of course, our conversation devolves into a Marcus Smart war tonight, so you're going to get many of those to come. New Year's Eve is the Celtics' next game, 5:30 p.m. on New Year's Eve. I'm going to be at the Garden for that one, so whoever's hosting here, I think it's Jacinto, will be carrying you through that, and I'll probably call in as well from the Garden. Been a blast going to the Garden. I'm going to do a little podcast about it, doing my first game there last week against the Heat, where Kelly Olynyk got his revenge. So thanks, everybody who's been listening. Happy New Year, since I won't be talking to you. Thanks for being with us through the first half of this season. I mean, as I've said many times, this post-game show almost died last year, and we've really been able to resurrect it through the playoffs into this season. This has been an institution at CLNS since 2009. After every single game, we've been going live. Nearly every single game. A few have been canceled here or there, but we've gone live after every single game this year, thanks to efforts like Taylor McLeod, who's been with us all year, Nick Jacinto, of course, who is always helping us out, and Andrew Rubino, who's joined us recently, fellow Syracuse University student and a good friend of mine. So thanks, guys. Happy New Year to both of you as well. We'll
yes,
be
sir.
Back, I'm sure, for Cavaliers-Celtics, now just two games away. In all probability, Isaiah Thomas's first game of the season and his first game back in Boston, and Kyrie Irving versus LeBron. Like that is, we're probably going to have to go 2 hours for that post-game show. So we're getting into the thick of it, guys.
Long live the king.
Taylor, for Andrew Rubino and for DraftKings, use code CLNS to get a free first game over there with your first deposit. I'm Bobby Manning. This has been the CLNS Media post-game show. Available on clnsmedia.com and iTunes. Just search Celtics Post Game Show. That's our show for tonight. Celtics win 99-98. They're 29-10, and they're still on top of the East. We'll see you on New Year's Eve. Nets Celtics. Good night, everybody.
This has been the Celtics Post Game Show on clnsradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.